It's the third week into the rains, around about 3 or 4 weeks, and we're continuing with our practice of daily sitting and walking together twice a day. And tonight, give some reflection and encouragement on you know, kind of wise attention, yoniso manasikara. It's like this Buddhist concept of, you know, using our thinking, but in a direct way, with a purpose, with a goal. Also, this is also to help to complement our practice of samatha, of calming the mind down. Because, as most of you know, yeah, we, you know, spend a lot of hours just, you know, watching the breath or being in the present moment. But sometimes we find it's hard to do. So it's good that we kind of step back, use our intellectual faculty, thinking, to investigate, also to complement, to help, you know, to find a different ways to train the mind. And but first and foremost, just to remind people that it's time for the training of our own mind. To remember that always use our experience, the daily experience of living with each other, the friction that arises from that. It's a way, as a mirror, into our own states of mind, to how we can become more skillful, how we can let go, how we can help each other on the path, and how we can be part of the problem and not part of the solution and not part of the problem. Remember, for most of us and for being here, so it's to look at ourselves, like Ajahn Chah said, to look at ourselves 95% of the time, and to only look at others 5% maximum. Because especially, you know, in the as we are just kind of in the beginning of the path, there's very limited energy that we have in the mind, limited clarity, and if we waste that on looking outward, then we won't see, we won't understand truly suffering in its many aspects, many facets. We won't understand it, we'll continue to suffer. We won't be able to let go of the cause of our suffering. So first is remind ourselves that we're here to train ourselves to see what is it that I'm doing, how mindful I am in walking, eating, going to the toilet. Am I in the present moment? Or am I somewhere else? Distracted with what happened yesterday? Or distracted by what may happen after the rains? It's always come back. Where am I? And is it skillful? Where's my mind? And is it heading in the right direction? Heading towards more wholesome states or more unwholesome states? As we look, you know, more inward, we can see that we don't have to go very far to find things to work with. Things are constantly arising in our mind. Even if we're alone in the room, memories, views and opinions about this and that, this person, that person, how things should be done, things are constantly coming up. So even if we aren't, you know, so we don't have to go very far to find things to work with, to let go, to make peace. As far as, you know, in terms of relating to other people, you know, Brahms' famous Korowat, that I always remember is, you know, be really, really tough on yourself. You know, make sure you do all your duties 100%, 110% of the time, to look after the requisites, look after the monastery, do as much diligence as you can, treat as your own, but also to be very, very gentle and kind with others. Usually with the opposite. We're very quick to jump on other people's mistakes and shortcomings. And yet we always overlook our own, gloss over our own laziness, our own fault-finding, our own part of the problems. And which is fine, which is natural. It's the natural of the untrained mind. But if we are dedicated to peace and liberation, then we should go against the grain and try to turn that around, to look inward. Someone does something annoying, someone does something that is off, then instead of going to set them, you know, to sort them out, reflect, oh, what this person did was unpleasant. May I not do the same thing? And that's where our training is. Someone, like I said, you know, someone took all the hot water in the shower and took, you know, a half an hour shower and took all the hot water. So going to them and sort them out, we said, oh, okay, this is what happens. You know, it's not very nice to go have a cold shower. So may I always remember this. I always make sure that the water's hot. I take my short showers and make sure there's always hot water for others. And this is how I should train myself. So it's always a way of, you know, kind of using our mind, staying in the present moment, and always tending towards more wholesome states. But so that's just the parts, something I thought I would kind of mention. In terms of kind of the formal practice of attending, using our mind outside of meditation to help empower it, to complement it, or even to start it up right. And the Buddha said, you know, there's many ways to reflect. And also, it's with the mind. The mind, as most of you probably found out, is more like a child. That you know, it's like being a parent to a child, something that's very fragile, but something that doesn't know is for its own good. So it's always constantly getting into trouble. So for us, it's, you know, to know what's good for the mind. And sometimes, you know, we need to encourage it. So those are the times that to reflect on things that, you know, would inspire the mind, and give it more energy. And personally, I find that reflections on our good karma, reflections on all the things that are the positive things in our mind, the positive things in our life, also helps to brighten the mind, helps to encourage us to further strengthen our own positive qualities. You know, sometimes in the train, you're always looking for a fault. Oh, what can I do? What did I do wrong today? Oh, I didn't sit long enough. I'm thinking too much. I'm reading too many books. Or I'm talking too much. But it's also good to say, well, you know, it's great. You know, yes, we're not perfectly enlightened, so there are times when we are a bit more restless, distracted than we could be. But, you know, all of us here have this great karma of being in the monastery, even if you're just visiting for the night. This great calm of, you know, coming and enjoying these wonderful facilities that we didn't have to build. It's already here. It's beautiful. and it's quiet. All we have to do is, you know, we have lots and lots of time to spend in seclusion. The food, we've been wonderfully supported by the lay community. People outside the monastery coming to bring the food, to encourage us. So all we have to do is sit and walk. So I reflect, wow, you know, it's a great opportunity to be here right now, right here. And all of you, you know, obviously we have our problems with the body, but you have been great health. And we can sit and walk for a long, long time. Reflecting on the good fortune of, you know, coming in contact, you know, we have the good karma to come into contact with the Buddhist teaching. And even if we haven't realized, you know, the supreme Dhamma of ultimate liberation, we know enough to get ourselves out of trouble. We know when we're attaching, we know when we're fault-finding, we know when our minds are negative, and we can, and we also know the antidote to how to train the mind, roughly. And also we know the importance that we should train the mind. And that's something that's very, very important. 99% of the world are lost in sense pleasure. They don't even know that they're supposed to train the mind. They think it's okay to indulge in sense pleasure, to do whatever you can to get squeeze as much pleasure out of life as possible. And I think it's kind of strange to deprive ourselves, to sit here and not eat in the afternoon, sit in a quiet place, that while we're torturing ourselves. But luckily, we have, you know, inkling of wisdom, the Buddhist teaching, to know that actually, you know, restraint is actually a higher happiness. Also, the happiness of sila, of keeping, you know, high ethical conduct, it lends a sense of, you know, of peace, of happiness, a sense of also a sense of freedom that we have. When we, you know, staying in the monastery, you don't have to lock your door, you don't have to worry that people might come in too, or cut and take our things. We know that people are not going to take advantage of us. We know that people are here, you know, very, very highly, you know, kind of high-minded people who want us to train. And you're also kind of, you know, trying to walk along the same direction as we are. So it's supporting us in our practice. And it's, you know, it's not a little thing to be in a spiritual community dedicated, you know, to the ultimate liberation. And everybody here keeping at least the 8 precepts when they're here. It's a great form, you know, it's a great way to support each other. So those are the great karmas that we have to, you know, to stay here and to practice. And also, you know, it also, you know, gives us, you know, kind of, sometimes it gives us a sense of urgency that these conditions are not going to be forever. These conditions exist right here and now. People they're with are not, you know, they're going to change, obviously. It's going to be subject to the law of nature, of change and impermanence. But for the time being, yeah, no. Wonderful weather, great food, great place, great facilities. And so, you know, the thing for us to do is just to enjoy that, to make the most of it, and to sit and walk, to practice meditation, to learn, study the Dhamma, look at our own mind, whatever ways we can. So, you know, just to remind people, just, you know, to give a few minutes every day, reflecting on the good karma that we've made, reflecting on great situation that we have right here. Sometimes, you know, kind of lend some oomph to our practice. Sometimes, you know, we're just going to bang away the breath day in, day out, sit and walk, and, you know, things can be a bit of a dull, so it's good to kind of use intellectual faculty to help strengthen the practice of samatha, practice of stilling the mind. The other thing I reflect is, continue on with that. It's kind of, for myself anyway, people can also reflect on this, that the good fortune that we've had just to be able to meet with great monks or nuns or different teachers, just even Buddhists, anybody that can inspire us in their teaching. And for myself, it's been an absolute kind of pleasure just to meet all the highly attained monks that I've come across in Thailand. They have nothing ever happened to my practice. Just the just having had the experience of being in contact with these pure being, it's in itself enough to be in the rope. You probably hear the same saying, if I die right here, right now, it would be worth it. It'd still be good enough. Just to reflect on that. Also reflect on the possibility of human perfection as embodied in the different teachers that we've met. Also reflect on the qualities that they've developed. And to know that those qualities that are so wonderful in these attained beings are the same qualities that we can develop in ourselves. Given the right conditions, given the right time, maybe not this lifetime, but certainly sometime in the future. And if we just get a tenth of that, it's still a wonderful thing to develop and to cultivate. A sense of complete acceptance, of loving kindness, of embracing everything and every situation. So it's reflecting that. So it helps to also lift and brighten the mind. Sometimes, it's just useful, before we sit down, and so we get into a rut of just banging away at the breath, or whatever we do, the usual, kind of meditation object that we have. It's good to reflect, take about 5 or 10 minutes to reflect on these kind of different ideas, different experiences that can help lift the mind. And at other times, the mind is very worldly, goes out to... is too distracted. So it's also, to do other kind of traditional reflections, death contemplation, that we don't have all the time in the world as well. And sometimes, reflecting on death, kind of brings the immediacy of the experience, brings back to the present moment. Thinking about, after the rains, I'm going to do this, do that, go here, go there. If I die, think, okay, but I might die tonight. So what's the point of projecting too far into the future? We might not be able to do. Or reflect on our past. I was this, I was that, I've been here, been there. I'm going to die tonight anyway. It's like, who cares? Where we were, what we did, whatever, how wonderful the experience is. We're still going to die. So also, that also cuts off the thinking mind, the distracted mind, the mind that likes to go outside the present moment, the mind that likes to go outside the monastery. I think what Rajan Dhan said, for the first few years of his practice, the sole idea was just coming back to the moment of, when he goes to sleep at night, he would always imagine that that's it. When I fall asleep, I'm not going to wake up the next morning. So he cuts up everything, sleep, cuts up all any thinking he might have. And also when he wake up the next day, he says, okay, this is the only day I have to practice left. So thinking like that, he put a lot of effort, because that's the only day he had left. wasn't thinking about, you know, what's he going to do after the rains. He wasn't thinking what he would do, where he would go. Just, you know, just sit and walk. Just ate enough for one more day's practice. So he kept things very, very simple and focused. Otherwise, you might have known, our mind just, you know, goes all over the place. Another funny story, though. I think Ajahn Ananda also did the same thing for the first 5 years. He did a lot of death contemplation. And I think he was Ajahn Chah's secretary. So he was walking around. Ajahn Chah was showing him, oh, you know, after the rains, we're going to build the sala. And he's thinking, no, I'm going to die tonight. And there's no after the rains. Then Ajahn Chah turns and is like, you're not going to die tonight. There's going to be a sala after the rains. So obviously Ajahn Chah knew what he was talking about. But generally, you know, the thinking of, yes, I'm going to die tonight, it's encouraged, obviously. But it's just a kind of an amusing anecdote. Obviously Ajahn Chah also knew that his disciple. But he also suggested, I think, to many of his monks to do different things to obviously use the fear of death also to bring mindfulness and awareness in the present moment. He would encourage his different monks to meditate on top of a well. You know, put up a little platform on the hole and meditate there late into the night. So obviously if you're sleeping, you're leaning back and forward, usually all that stuff gets you become very, very focused, very awake and alert when you're sitting on top of a high thing. You're afraid you're going to fall. And so using our own fears and our own kind of attachment also can bring awareness and mindfulness to help meditate. And that's the thing about the practice, as I say over and over again, is to be sensitive, to know what your mind needs in that moment. And the great thing about it, or the challenging thing, is there's not a formula. That yes, you know, certain teachers, you know, says do this, you know, Buddha 24/7. Other teachers, there's, you know, Anapanasati. Other teachers, you know, contemplate the body. But those are paths that work for different teachers ahead of us. But, you know, each and every one of us is to say, you know, what is it I need right here, right now? And that's mindfulness, that's awareness in the present moment. It's not an idea, a map that you drill out, okay, I'm going to do this, do that stuff. And in the morning, I'm going to do this. 2 years from now, I'm going to move on to this other object meditation. I'm going through the four Brahma Vihara. You know, 1 week after another. It's, you know, it's always, you know, when you sit down, what is it that you need? And how should you bring around? And it's just kind of a simple thing of always reflecting, you know, and what to reflect and how to cultivate the mind. Is this going to bring more wholesome states? And it's going to bring about the diminishing of unwholesome states. So whatever we're doing, you can always ask that question. Is my mind going to be more, is more wholesome dhammas going to arise in my mind when I'm doing this, thinking about this, going to say this? Or is more more unwholesome dhamma is going to arise in my mind when I do this? And you should judge all actions according to that principle. Simple, but it's very, very helpful. It brings it into focus, what we should or shouldn't be doing. And all our practice is just a matter of that. Just cultivating more wholesome dhammas and letting go of more unwholesome dhammas. And it is the grinding, the daily grind. Grinding, you know, I can imagine you have a diamond in your hand, the diamond of your mind, grinding away, polishing away, day in, day out, until it's perfectly bright and beautiful. It's something that we have to keep up. Something that takes a lot of patience. So sometimes it's good to, you know, have very lofty goals of, you know, enlightenment, of peace, of jhanas, or whatever. But other times, you know, it's just good, you know, sometimes it's inspiring to see what the heights that we can attain or could be attained by human potential. It's very inspiring to read the biographies of, you know, Ajahn Mun, the great meditation masters. But sometimes people, you might get depressed because then they look at themselves like, oh, I am so far away. I'm never going to get there. My mind is just polluted with the five hindrances, polluted with sensual desires and cravings. I'll never get there. So some people do get a bit depressed when they read that. So it's always, you know, to find a way to look closer and to give ourselves goals that we can achieve. And also to be very, very, very patient with the goals. To not make it too lofty. To say, you know, if I have the goodness of, you know, to finish the reins, stay in the monastery and just to finish the reins, you know, that'd be good. Well, if I have the good fortune of just sitting here, if I only get a minute's peace in 2 hours of sitting, that's good enough. Otherwise, you know, maybe because I'm being a senior monk with lots of responsibilities, if I just sit, I think it's really great. Just sitting here, watching my breath, I don't have to do one thing. I don't have to talk, I don't have to plan, I don't have to do different things, multitask. I'm just sitting, it's great. Just sitting, watching my breath. Yes, sometimes it's not fully concentrating the breath, I was just still. Just sitting quietly, not talking, is great. It's a wonderful experience. So with that, you know, building on contentment, building on staying in the present moment, the mind starts to settle down. Sometimes we sit, and we start to crave, we want things to happen, want thinking to stop. Then we're creating more craving in our mind, creating more disturbance. But we just rejoice in the fact that you're just sitting, and it's great. And like, you know, I am saying this over and over. I think it's really great to be. And sit in the room with our eyes closed and meditate together. Best thing we can do with each other. The most most beneficial things that we can spend our time. The most deeply spiritual thing we can do. The most deeply we connect, we can connect with each other through the silence of the mind, through meditating. The most spiritually significant thing we can do each other is to sit quietly and watch our own breath. And I say this over and over again because I think it is by far the most helpful thing we can do with each other is sit and cultivate our mind. Great. Pansa is rolling on. 3 weeks into the Pansa. These are maybe blessed with wonderful weather. A nice harmonious community. Just superb support this round. So yeah. So all that's left for us, each and every one of us, is just to continue this practice, continue our polishing up our own diamonds each and every moment, whatever ways we can. To continue to live with peace and peace and harmony, obviously with each other, but also within ourselves. And hopefully things are quietening down. Looking to stepped up the practice a little bit next week. We'll do a 6 to 8. And then a 2 to 4 in the evening, in the afternoon. And then 6 to 9 in the evening. Just more allowing, like I said, it is the encouragement to practice. But it is something that only each and every one of us can do for ourselves. Hopefully people make the best of the opportunity that they have, giving their own conditions. But yeah, for myself, I find yeah, it's been a great rain so far. And so I thought I'd offer some reflections of yeah, like you know, just not to, to always use your intellectual faculty to complement the practice of anapanasati, samatha, calming the mind, to use it for a purpose of, you know, more peace, more stillness. Like Ajahn Chah Mahabodhi said, you know, using wisdom to calm the mind, to cultivate samadhi. You know, always, you know, the practice, you know, roll around each other. Once you have a still mind, you can see deeply. Wisdom arises from a still mind. But also, initially, obviously, you don't have wisdom, or you don't have samadhi just yet, then use whatever wisdom, thinking mind you have to, you know, make the mind more peaceful, or to lift it up, to bring more energy, or to dampen it down, bring more peace and stillness, to cultivate whatever practices that helps to focus the mind as well. And then once the mind is settled down, we can see more deeply, and hopefully it will become more peaceful. So the process of samatha and vipassana, contemplation, kind of rolls around each other until we achieve deep, deep wisdom that liberates the mind. So I offer that from your reflection and encouragement this evening.
Namo Buddhaya. Namo Buddhaya. Sadhu Karma Dharma Se Sama.